sorry. So if my heart ever like stops, like I have a heart attack and my heart stops and I have to be revived with like a defibrillator, I'm going to get a tattoo over my chest that says "Rez, please."
Seriously.
I'll do it. Actually, I'm already planning a tattoo down my my back, and it's really simple. Just actually labeling out all of my spine. It's literally just labeling my spine. So like atlas, axis, C1, C2, or 3, 4, 5, and so on, like all the way down to my sacrum and coccyx. Just a little text label. That's it.
I'm glad you know what all that means. It sounds complicated.
Well,
it's just labeling the anatomy. That's all.
Yeah, I had that once in university because I studied biology, and I did not remember it. I just learned it a day before the exam, and then I forgot it already because I really do not need it.
Screw you, man. So I took my zoology course already once, and it's a fucking difficult course. Human anatomy and physiology, and it's only a 1,000 level course, but it is the hardest course in college I have yet to take.
In university, the zoology course was so far the hardest course I had. Yeah. But now there will come biochemistry, and biochemistry is like hell.
Oh, dude, good luck.
Yeah, chemistry, but the biologists ruined it. They just ruined it.
I don't know. The hardest course I had to deal with in college was hands down my computer networking course. All the geeks out there listening to this, not the basic networking. That's pretty straightforward. But for advanced level networking, they want you to learn how to do IP address ranges. And without getting too technical, basically we had to not only learn the regular way of doing it, we had to learn how to do it in binary. We had to learn how to do it in hexadecimal. And we had to learn how to fluently translate between the three different numbering systems. As well as what the tests are, is we would literally have to spell out entire sentences using binary conversions.
Oh, good Lord.
And it was like, wow, you know, I've got an app on my phone and I can do this in about 10 seconds, but for the next hour and a half, you're going to make me do this the old-fashioned way on pen and paper because somehow that makes me a better computer professional. I don't know.
It's stupid. It's kind of funny because we still have the mentality of, oh, well, we need to do this because one day the computers may not exist when, yeah, they will.
Yeah, the day the computers stop existing or functioning on this planet, it's the day everything stops working, just about.
There will be just so much chaos.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, unfortunately,
but
for everyone listening,
all it will take is one really well-placed solar flare, or Russia will just have to launch a nuke into orbit and they'll amp the entire Earth, or some old 70s communist propaganda. I don't know.
Or a more realistic option would be for the Earth's magnetic poles to flip. It does happen historically. And we are overdue for them to flip again. So when the flip happens, that would be very interesting to see if our stuff still works correctly.
Oh, yeah. That was supposed to be the whole Mayan Advent calendar thing, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think, but yeah, the problem is that also birds would be affected by the, if that reverses, because most of the birds have like a sense for magnetic fields, and yeah, if it suddenly turns around, then they will fly in the wrong direction, and then they will end up at the poles in in winter.
Yeah, they'll fly north for winter, and they'll be like, "Wait, what the shit? It's supposed to be like tropical vacation time, and I'm freezing."
Fun fact for you: humans have those same little magnetic sensors in their mind. It's just we haven't used them in many, many, many years. So for most of us, they're just kind of there sitting collecting dust.
I remember back in 2009, they were actually doing some minor augmentation where you could actually get a magnetic sensor like placed in your fingertips, so you could feel magnetic. Well, yeah. You could feel magnetic fields.
Oh God! Yeah, somebody on YouTube. On that. Somebody on YouTube did that do-it-yourself style, and he cut off his finger and put in a neodymium magnet, and then he could suddenly feel where metal is and stuff. But it also got wrong because it's inflamed. So you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, so you have to be very careful about it. So the thing is the magnetic input that they put in human beings professionally were very, very faint, just barely magnetic enough that, like, if you put your hand over another magnet, you could feel like the pulsation of it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's that special time again, everyone.
Hey, the clock didn't go off. What the hell?
Well, that's because I am at Midwest Fur Fest.
All right.
Clock.
So my clock is currently 65 miles away being lonely by itself while I am here with 6,000 other feather and fuzz butts having a great time getting our party on and thoroughly.
And you took the time to come podcast with us when you could be getting shit-faced with thousands of furries? Why?
Because I can get shit-faced with you guys and then go back to being shit-faced with thousands of furries. So it's a win-win for me.
Okay.
Okay.
However, we do, Fleeks, we need you to do the Westminster chime. Look, it's become a habit for me. I can't actually do the podcast unless I hear it.
I hope that was enough.
Well, I guess it means it's time to start the show.
Okay, no, we are ready, right?
This is episode 7 of Bird Life. I'm Core.
I'm Fleeks.
And I'm Storm.
No, you're Storm.
He did the thing. He did the thing. He did the thing. Oh, my God.
And what's that?
He introduced him by his own name.
Oh, and in true furry fashion, being here at a convention, you know, I got here on Wednesday, and not a lot of people are here on Wednesday, just a few hundred, and I've already seen all kinds of goofy-ass fursuiters, but my highlight so far has been seeing someone literally as an anthropomorphic closet.
What?
Yes, closet. They were literally a walking anthropomorphic closet. And they would open up the front of their closet and they'd be this goofy fursuiter inside. And literally they had a shirt that said, keeping it in the closet. And then they would shut the closet and go back to walking around.
They were a closet furry.
Yes.
Nice.
Not a bad idea.
So I want to ask you guys what you have to drink this week, but I also want to start out by saying I don't have anything to drink this week because I woke up feeling kind of sick to my stomach. So I just have a cup of coffee, and that's about it. Just something to settle it. Oh, but what do you guys have to drink?
I have a Bischofshof Regensburger Premium. It's a local beer. And yeah,
okay, no, hey, stop, stop. Fleeks, stop. Just a second, okay? I want you to say that again. I want you to say it slowly because I'm going to Google it just to make sure you're not making these names up.
He's got to be pulling this out of his ass.
I'm sure you can't even spell it, but if you wish, Bischofshof Regensburger
Bischofs Bischof cookie.
No, it's just a pale beer. It's just a pale beer. And probably the it's a premium beer. And probably the best local beer here, at least in my opinion.
Okay, one more time for me. One more time.
Bischofshof Regensburger Premium. Das Bier, das uns zu Freunden macht.
And the pale beer for everyone listening. For everyone listening, pale beer in Germany is what they drink for breakfast as part of their wake-up routine because, you know, they don't want to hit the hard shit until after they've had their morning shower.
It's not compared to an Indian pale ale, I'm guessing.
No. It just has 5% alcohol.
Oh, yeah, so it's a nice light breakfast percentage. Gotcha. So what are your guys' takes on IPAs, by the way? Do you drink them? Do you like them?
Depends on the IPA, what I would say. I especially love the ones who are brewed with the orange hop or the chocolate hop. But all in all, I'm more like a stout drinker. I like it dark and creamy.
Okay. Ooh, you like it dark and creamy, baby. Well,
we're all white here, so.
No, I'm a black griffin, thank you very much. But I personally tend to like sweeter drinks, so the 99.9% of IPAs I don't like because they usually taste quite bitter to me. Yeah. That being said, one IPA. I forgot the brewery's name, unfortunately, but I found one that made like this chocolate IPA that tasted like I was drinking a Hershey chocolate bar with a kick, and it came across actually really good. So, I guess there
is
hope.
Do you remember the name of it?
No.
Yeah, I really love the one who are they are actually not really brewed with chocolate most of the time, but it's the aroma of the hop because there are so many different kinds of hops and they all have other flavors, you know, and a chocolate hop tastes like bitter chocolate, you know what I mean? Dark chocolate.
Yes.
That's my favorite.
What about you, Cor?
Well, I hate IPAs. I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to get to the point that I can at least kind of like tolerate and be able to enjoy them. Because I enjoy actually having a vast array of beers to, you know, recommend to friends under the belt. But I just can't get over IPAs. But you mentioned a chocolatey beer and that Polygamy Porter that I had a couple weeks ago. That was definitely a chocolate. There was essence of chocolate in that. That was it actually made it pretty good. Still not my favorite beer on earth, but Polygamy Porter was pretty good.
Oh yeah, I really love how beer gets like newly invented since a while. Like all that new craft beer breweries. I really really love that trend and. Really, every time I'm in Berlin, I visit craft beer pubs with my friends there, and we are trying us through the card, and it's always awesome.
I love the uprise of craft breweries. I really do. It's amazing.
Yeah, we have that purity law in Germany, the Bavarian purity law. And it prevents people from, for example, putting, I don't know, a chocolate nibs in it, you know, chocolate beans or something. But I think that really kills the creativity of the brewers. And now they can't sell craft beer as beer, actually, but they just call it craft brew or something, you know what I mean? Or the English word beer goes, the English word
just, loop it around, find a loophole, basically.
Yeah.
Right on.
And that's unfortunate, because we've got craft breweries damn near popping up in every small town in America, and in major cities, you've got them every couple of blocks, it seems.
It's true. The craft brewery scene here in Salt Lake has really taken off. Actually, if we ever get to do a live show at like a convention or something, I will so smuggle you guys some Polygamy Porter.
Oh yeah, and I will bring you some German beers.
yes, please.
Now, as for what I am drinking on this fine afternoon in Chicago, I am drinking. Well, first, guess what I'm drinking first. What type of alcohol?
A wine. I'm going to guess on Riesling.
Hey, you're partially right, but it was not a Riesling. Second guess?
It's not a Riesling. I don't know Moscato. Much wine.
Core, you've won it. Congratulations. Yeah. Oh. You win a Griffin hug. But at any rate, I am drinking. It's from the Breinger winery, and it's called Lusciously Sweet. Because it's luscious. Pink Moscato.
It is pink.
It's pink.
Like, oh, boy.
And it's supposedly a product of Chile. And it's like taking a sip of orgasmic heaven every time I drink it. It's my first time drinking it, too. And this is like, oh, my God, it's so luscious.
There are a lot of really good pink Moscatos, not going to lie. I enjoy them.
My favorite wine is Fragolino. Do you know Fragolinos?
Nope, never heard of it.
It's a desert wine, and it tastes. It contains no strawberries, but it absolutely tastes like strawberries, like a very sweet strawberry. And also, it has that other. It's a very like your childhood candy taste. I don't know how they make it, but yeah, it's a real wine with grapes, but it tastes like some desert from your childhood. I don't know how they make it, but it's really my favorite wine ever, and it really is addictive, and I don't know. But it's illegal in some countries of Germany because for some EU reasons, or I don't know, because it's an American kind of grape. I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like, so I've Googled it because you have my interest peaked here. I Googled it, and yeah, they don't import them from the U.S. for some reason.
It has. Yeah. I think Fleeks is right. I think it has to do with those weird, insane, stupid laws regarding American grapes.
Mm-hmm.
So it really limits, especially when it comes to wine, what types of wines can be imported.
It's probably the Italian.
Bet your ass, I'm going to go try to find this later today.
It's probably an Italian thing. I don't know. It's the fault of the Italians.
We'll blame them. That's fine.
Yes. Well, here's a question I have for you guys. Since I am at a convention, you know, Midwest Fur Fest, on track to be one of the largest or the largest conventions in the U.S. So
how far behind from Anthrocon is it?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it's within 500 to 1,000 attendees. Don't quote me on that, but I think with the rate of growth, they will pass AC if AC continues to slow. But Biggest Little Fur Con is growing at such a rapid pace that they may end up surpassing MFF one day. So go to BLFC.
I will be going to BLFC this upcoming year. So,
ooh, that is a con I've always wanted to go to. So I'm thinking about next year, signing up for
the,
it.
The two closest cons to me are BLFC and RMFC, Rocky Mountain Fur Con. The only con I've ever been to was one that we held here in Salt Lake called Furry Unlocked, which was largely a gaming furry convention, and unfortunately it didn't take off.
That happens with cons. Cons are a labor of love. I've been on Eddie FurCon since it was a pizza party idea, and now we are on what, year 7 or 8, and it's amazing. It's an amazing roller coaster of emotion and love to get a con going. But it's, here's my question.
So much work. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh yeah, so much work. And when you see con staff, especially at a small con, give them a hug because they're usually running on next to no sleep for the entire weekend. So yeah, definitely a labor of love.
So I was running on an interesting combination of espresso beans and wine.
Ooh, I want to work at your con. My question is this. Since, you know, all three of us then, by the sound of it, have gone to furry conventions in some capacity, what are your favorite, some of your favorite quick little stories or things that you saw happen at a convention you've attended? It can be goofy, silly, happy, anything.
That's a hard question because there happens so much on furry cons. And I'm almost always sit outside and drink, get wasted with friends. So at least the last few times, but I think that the best times I had on Neuroferens was like when we sit in the artist alley, and not artist alley, I mean artist lodge. And we are sitting there. I was there with my ex-girlfriend, and we're sitting on a table with Atimos and other friends like Alex Defense and stuff. And we just did a lot of stupid things over coffee. We drank way too much coffee because the first Euroference I attended, there was actually a real coffee machine in the dealer, in the artist lodge, and we used that. It was free coffee for the artists, and oh god, I was so over caffeinated.
Oh my god.
we just did a lot of stupid things, draw stupid stuff, and I don't know. It was just hilarious. but I can't really say anything that was anything specific, because normally the whole cons are like awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, there's actually one pretty fun story. Like, and my friend Rev, he's like, he always finds a room party. He has that skill. It's like I don't know. It must be in his genes. I don't know. I really don't know.
He can just sniff him out.
Yeah, and he always finds them here. He knows so many people. He always sniffs them out, right? That's it. And then somehow we landed on a party. It was a pretty small party, like three people or something. They organized it. And well, one of the things we noticed at first was the room was there were a lot of balloons in there, and. No, it does not get in that direction. But suddenly, on the way, I forgot that. On the way we went there, our group grew, and suddenly we were, I think, about 20 people. And then we suddenly stand in that room, and you could see. You had to see the face of the one who did the party. He was like a bit overwhelmed, I think. And yeah, he had that special affection to balloons. And the people started to bounce around, one blow up. And then another one you saw, he really was like stressed and stuff. And then I and Rev started to kick out the people and told him, hey.
Okay. So all these people just kind of showed up because they thought, oh, there's a room party here, so we're just going to show up, like no invitation whatsoever.
No, it was an invitation, but I think the one who hosted the party wasn't prepared for that. And there were a few jerks in that group, somehow on our tail, and they did not stop throwing the balloons. Even the host said, hey, please stop. And yeah, after a while, we did it, and then we throw the people out more or less.
Yeah, I dated a girl once. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that party was fail a bit.
Yeah, furry cons. I've worked as the bouncer griff at room parties many a times, and if you do not have someone guarding the door, furries will just, you know, sniff out a party, and next thing you know, your party of 15 friends and just turned into an alcohol-based orgy of, you know, 500 people that somehow a single person room.
That's just uncomfortable, man.
Yeah,
I'm puzzled, let me tell you. Those are some experiences.
that's not even overstated. It really is. If furries sniff out a room party, and too much. The best thing is, do not announce it on Twitter. Do not announce it on Twitter, or you will be fucked.
They always do, though. They always announce it on Twitter.
Yeah, and then they are like, oh.
Well, if you have a good bouncer, then you'll be fine. But Cora, you said you had an experience?
No, so it was just that I dated a girl once who had a thing for balloons, and like I popped one near her once. I was just kind of joking around, teasing her about it, and I popped it, and she like had like this mental breakdown. She wasn't exactly the most mentally stable person I've ever dated, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
A lot of people have a very big affection to balloons, and I heard there are the poppers and the non-poppers, and the non-poppers hate the poppers, and I'm not deep in that, and I really don't know.
I don't understand a bit of it. I really
yeah, but
don't.
Each to their own, right?
The poppers. You want to pop my balloon? Mm-hmm.
I can think of a couple things that happened at the convention I went to, Furry Unlocked. Both were during the fursuit parade. One, I think there was a particular fursuit that everybody kind of had like an instant crush on, like the moment he walked by. I'll give a shout out to him, but he's Hart Reindeer, H-A-R-T. And easily the sexiest reindeer ever. Weirdly sexy. I have like a gif or something I can post to the group later on of him just strutting by, but he had the sexiest strut, and like we were all kind of like flirtatiously shouting out to him as he was walking by, and we got him to do like a pole dance on one of the poles that was in, I guess, the walkway.
Mm. Oh my.
And then another one was there was a dealer who was selling heads in the dealer's den. One of the local furs convinced them that to let him wear it during the fursuit auction. So he strutted around and kept stealing things from people who were like passing by. Like he grabbed as many hats as he could, and he just started wearing them on top of his fursuit head.
Jeez.
Not bad.
That's adorable.
Also, because you, I have another memory. It was pretty hilarious. It was my first Euroference ever, the first fursuit parade ever. And yeah, my ex-girlfriend has a hyena suit, and I spotted her, yeah. And suddenly, we were walking through Magdeburg, that's the town where the Euroference was at that time. And suddenly, some guy with those, I don't even know the name for it, you know that card that old people have?
Yes.
What is it called in English?
We call them a granny mobile.
Yeah, the granny cars. Mobile. Okay. A cart. Cart. With
cart. Oh, yeah. oh, okay.
Or an America mobile.
The squeaky carts they push before them. They walk in, but they use it as support. I'm sure you know exactly know what I mean.
Yes.
And he had like a music player on it. It was like a weird guy. He wasn't even old. He was, I would maybe say 40 or something, 40 something. And he had like the biggest glasses I ever saw, with very thick glasses, you know. And he was like following us with the card, and on the music player there was like music from the 20s. I don't know, like the very old stuff that you play on a gramophone. And it was horrible. And he followed us the whole. He was pretty fascinated from the parade, and then he followed us. And then hey, we had music.
Hey, that you worked. Had theme music, whether you wanted it or not.
We had music support then, yeah. It was pretty funny. He was harmless. He was just a bit creepy, but yeah, he was harmless. And so.
So he wasn't even a furry? He was just someone that showed up?
Yeah. Followed us. And that music, it was just hilarious. Oh God. I think he just had the card, that card thing, to place a music player on it, and he also it seems like that guy does it all day every day, but then we came across and then he followed us.
Hey, Fleeks,
he wasn't
just
like a hobo or something.
No, it doesn't seem like he didn't look like a mental healthy man.
Oh, okay.
But But he, like I said, he was harmless and it was fun. He was an insider after that.
He just couldn't help being attracted to your good looks. You know, he saw you, he was like, there's a bird that needs a theme song. And started to give you one whether you wanted it or not.
From the Roaring Twenties.
Yeah, the Roaring Twenties. Like really gramophone quality. And yeah, that was...
Well, it was amazing. I got a couple of tales from conventions over the years.
Okay.
My first Midwest Fur Fest was in 2006. It was my first furry con ever. So my first, let's see, groom party was not what I was expecting. I was going to meet up with some folks because I have a little side to Storm that people don't know. And it's fun to play around and be goofy and silly once in a while. So I'm going to meet up with them. And I go to this, what I think is the room, and I open it up, and there's this pile of furs on the floor who, instead of talking to me, decided to growl and bark and roar at me. And this 400-pound man in the corner who I said hi to, and then he barked at me. And I was like, wow, this is weird. And as I turned to leave, the bathtub is full of used diapers. And I was like, oh my God.
No.
Sadly, I believe that because sadly, I can't. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. Furry cons. Yay.
My friends were standing out in the hallway, dying of laughing. One had a stopwatch running. And he was like, so did you enjoy your first party experience? And I looked at him and I just said, asshole. And this it was especially funny because they had this Canadian accent because they were Canadian. They were just dying of laughing.
Yeah. Which convention was this at?
Midwest Fur Fest.
Oh.
Yeah. I heard similar stories from others. I wasn't surprised. I totally knew.
I was expecting like rainforest or something.
Trust me,
generally one can say that's not the maturity. That's not the maturity. That's not. Who are there to make you laugh, I think, or cringe, I don't know.
Here's the thing.
Every fandom has cons just to meet up with other people who do that.
Yep.
Just so they can have that experience. Oh no!
Yeah, and like the fan.
And I'm fine with that. It's just, you know, if you see someone come in, that's obviously they're new or kind of uncomfortable trying to get to know people. You pause and you speak to them in English, and then you go back to charping and burping and doing your thing. But you know, I guess they missed the memo on that. Yes, lots of borking.
The fandom is for a lot of people like the first platform to like live out their kinks, and so it's just naturally that people meet on cons to do so.
There's a majority of furries that don't have social etiquette. I'm sorry, I'm just gonna be honest straight up. It's because we're an internet based culture, and people on the internet are not very societally cultured, you know.
Yeah, and then we also have a lot of nerds that did not find as much connections in their childhood or when they were a teenager, and so it's natural, I think.
It's true. Yeah. But that's not the majority of furries. If you go to a convention, you're more likely to just have a good time and make a bunch of friends, because the majority of people that go to cons are people who are mature and want to go have, you know, fun and drink and get loose, but not necessarily go weird, you know?
Right. Yeah, right. And even the ones that do enjoy the more alternative lifestyle tend to know how to balance it and keep it behind closed doors, unless, you know, someone's truly interested in it. But some other highlights I've had from my con experiences, let's see. At Indie Fur Con one year, I was going to get off on a floor. And I open the door, step off the elevator onto the landing. I see this cute little foxy guy come bouncing by, and he's, you know, making these fox noises, being all adorable. And then this 7-foot tall wolf, I kid you not, the man was huge, just says, "You're coming with me," picks him up, throws him over his shoulder. The fox says, "I've never met you." And he said, "Oh, but you will." And then takes him back to his room, two doors down from the elevators. And the fox says, "Oh, my." And they walk into the room and the door gets kicked shut. And I was like, wow.
Don't say that every day. Pickup culture, if there was the definition I think... of pickup culture.
I have to be honest. I think this was, that was acted. I think they did it for show, because that's not even a thing. You know, they often do stuff like that.
There are people with furry apps and stuff that literally said, "I'm available. Come find me." And if you find them, I found this out later on, of course, that you can go and meet up and have fun with them if you want to. Apparently, that's
culture. Hookup culture exists, and there are varying levels of extremity to it. That does sound within the probability. It's weird, but yeah, it happens. I mean, I worked at a bar, for Christ's sake, so I know that people can actually just walk up to other people and be like, "Hey, you want to fuck?" And the other person be like, "Hey, yeah, let's do it out in the parking lot right now." And then I have to go out and be like, "No, not in the parking lot. Go somewhere else."
Yeah. My favorite story of all time starts out kind of sad, but it ends on a great note, so just bear with me.
Okay.
At MFF 2 years ago, we had a bit of a chlorine incident, as you may have heard.
Yeah, we read about that.
I was there. I lived it. I was in the lobby. Next thing you know, I'm sitting with a bunch of friends in one of the bench seats, just chirping away, because that's what birds do best. And it starts to smell chlorine. And at first I think, okay, someone is cleaning the kitchen, because we're right by a restaurant and the restaurant was closed and I could see them with mops and stuff. And I'm like, okay, maybe they bleached or something, give the kitchen a good cleaning. Then it gets stronger and stronger. And I'm like, holy shit, someone must have died back there and they're cleaning up the blood from his dead body. Oh my God. And time fire alarms go. At that point in time, the fire alarm goes off. And they tell us we need to leave. So we go to start leaving en masse as firefighters come in. And I literally step outside to literally what looks like hundreds of ambulances lined up. They've got triage set up. They have the entire convention of, remember, 6,000-ish people outside flooding into the streets. It's 20 degrees outside, so they open up the building next door, which is another convention center, to let us go in for warmth. So I make my way over to the Hilton across the street from MFF, meet up with friends, and then we go to the meeting point that the con is established in the convention center. And, you know, we're all standing around in this convention center and people are being treated for chlorine exposure. And apparently some people, apparently chlorine can really screw you up in high enough doses. And I never knew that.
Oh yeah. Oh, totally.
Totally. It destroys your cells in the lung and can cause a lot of very hard stuff. It's not, you don't play with chlorine.
So basically someone did something stupid in one of the stairwells. So if you were by one of the stairwells where they did it, it hit you the most. Otherwise, you got varying levels of degrees. I just got really watery eyes and coughed, but thankfully I was outside by the time it got really strong. But what really touched me about it was, and was amusing to an extent, was when the firefighters came to your hotel room to tell you you had to leave, they didn't give you time to get dressed. So you had people outside in their full rubber gear and bondage gear.
Oh my God.
The mersuiters in the mersuit equipment covered up by a towel. Oh, it was.
Oh boy.
It was. Yeah, I can't even imagine that.
It was full exposure.
So but here's the thing. When that happened, that was actually during my initial EMT course when I became a basic EMT. That happened kind of close to the mid-semester. And then later on this semester, they actually brought up that incident as a critical incident to study. And they left out all the details, the fact that there was a furry convention. But they actually said, hey, there was a hotel, you know, out here that someone recently dropped a chlorine bomb in. And how would you, you know, they made us assess the situation. They had us, we actually kind of live role-played it, like, you know, to kind of get a feel for it. Like, how would we handle this situation if we were responders to it? Mm-hmm. And it was actually really, really interesting to have to consider that, because the firefighters would have to be in full gear and EMTs and police could not go into the situation itself because of the density of the chlorine.
Yes, they had to ventilate the building. And so that took several hours for them to vent it out to where it was safe enough to return in. So while we were waiting in the main convention center, something pretty amazing happened. Everyone was walking around, checking up on everyone, making sure everyone was okay. People started playing games. Some people in some corners started like doing silly karaoke, singing songs. And when they started to let us to go back in the hotel, it was a very controlled reentry. They would let in a group at a time. So we went in and they let in, 30 people, and then we'd wait 30 people and we'd wait. And so we're outside again, waiting to get let back in. So basically the fursuiters lined up along the edges of our basically long line of people. And we had this massive snuggle pile of warmth because most of us didn't have coats. And the fursuiters sort of snuggled us together. And the police officers were snapping pictures and selfies with the suiters. And people had music going. And it was turned into one big fucking party. We had Chlorine Con going on outside the hotel.
You know, that's actually a really good thing. The fact that it was a community bonding moment. And that's one of the things that it's just one of those moments that shows the purity and just amazing nature of the fandom. Yeah, there were probably people out there freezing their nipples off because they were still in their bondage gear. But to welcome them into a circle and be like, hey, don't rub on me too much, but keep you warm here. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from my perspective, if I would smell chlorine and it would get overly, the odor would be too high, I would probably not running outside, but I would try to get outside as fast as I can. I wouldn't panic, but yeah, because like I said, chlorine is a very nasty stuff. And yeah, but it's also you won't die from indirectly inhale it. You would probably die if you have the reaction put together chlorine and acid. I don't know how the English word for it is at the moment, but acid and a kali, not kali. You can make that. I think that there was a bomb like that. And as I know, in America, you can get.
And, that's terrifying.
Yeah. We don't want to tell people how to make a bomb, though.
No. I don't want to tell them, but they can look it up on YouTube. So.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, it's basic chemistry knowledge that reacts.
Goddamn chemists, man. Okay. So this is terrorist cast.
Yes. And.
No,
But
what I wanted to say is, if you do not sniff directly on that can, you have enough time to leave the scenery.
The funniest part of the whole weekend, because of the Chlorine Con incident, was all the people that lied and said that they were going to see their friends, or lied and said they were at work for the weekend in Chicago, etc., were on national live TV waiting in line, dancing and singing, and all their friends and coworkers could see them. And it resulted in a lot of conversations being had that people did not expect. And that was
a large reason why I avoid being in photographs, at fur meets and cons and everything.
But yeah, that was pretty amusing to me. But I guess since we're talking about experiences, what we're about, I had just gotten back from New York City, as I'm sure you two remember if you follow my Twitter at least, and some of you listening to this probably do. And have either of you both been to New York City?
No, terrified.
I wasn't even close to America.
Why are you terrified of New York City?
I don't like cities and big crowds, man. It's just not how that's just not my get down.
But there's like 500 people per square foot in New York City. It's amazing.
No, thank you.
I myself, I love big cities like Berlin because you it's so multicultural and you can get like everything. You can get everything from every nation. You can get the rarest beers. You can get the rarest foods. You can like, if you're in Berlin, you can easily cook Japanese because you get all the ingredients you need, for example.
Right.
And that's what I love because I'm a passionate cook. And yeah, I really plan to move to Berlin as soon as I settled my studies and as soon as I have my degree. Yeah.
Because I love big cities. Berlin sounds like a fascinating city, especially given its history of being divided at one time. That really sounds like a fascinating place.
I don't care about that. I want the beer on tap delivery system, man, that we talked about like episode 1 or 2. Can I get that?
Absolutely.
For me, the craft beer, the lot of craft beer hipster pubs are what I'm going to, because I really, you can say about hipsters what you want, but fuck, they have good food and beverages. Oh god, I love their stuff. I love the hipster food culture. I can't lie.
Well, my New York City trip, not to bore you guys too much, just a couple of things that stood out at me, was it's utterly amazing to touch on what you said, Corp, how a city of basically, when you include the metro area, 7 million people somehow functions. And I visited many key establishments and some museums, and I saw the 9/11 memorial, which is an emotional experience. I encourage all to go. But the most two most important things for me that I got to enjoy was I went to the top of the Empire State Building, which being able to look over the edge and there's nothing around you besides a fence and you can see all of New York City when it's very windy is kind of like you're defeating death. And it really gets your avian senses tickling because it's like, wow. If only I could fly over that.
It just makes me think of the How I Met Your Mother episode where they all want to go to the Empire State Building because they've never been there. Anybody else watch How I Met Your Mother? Any fans? Yes.
No,
I've watched it.
Not me. I just know a few episodes, but it never really catched my interest because I'm too cool, you know? No, just kidding. Oh, I just never got into it.
And whatever, please. Whatever.
The other thing I would strongly encourage if you both go or anyone listening to go to is the One World Trade Center Observatory. It's the newest World Trade Center, the tallest, 1,775 or 6 feet tall. And the way they do the observatory is utterly spectacular. When you first walk in, it shows you all the people from around the world that have visited that day, because typically about 6,000 people a day visit it.
Wow.
And the day I went, most of the visitors were from the UK. And the ride up the elevator is like you're fully immersed in this evolving experience, because it shows how New York City was from like the Jurassic era, and then you see it develop into a big city, and you see the skyscrapers get built, and then you see the original Twin Towers get built, and then you see them building the New World Trade Center. And it's a very positive experience. Obviously, yes, you know, 9/11 and whatnot happened, but that's more the memorial. When you go to the observatory, they focus on the logistics of how they built it and how emotional the building is to all the workers and how powerful of a message it sends. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, way cool.
So, yeah, just something for everyone to check out. So,
At this point, we are almost to an hour in. So, do we have anything else we want to mention in? Artists, birds of the week, that kind of thing?
I have at first. I want to mention a bird that's pretty active on Tumblr. That character has is called Fishcrow, and so is called the Tumblr.
Yes.
Yes, and yeah, the Fish Crow is a crow from Germany, and like I said, mostly active on Tumblr. And he draws those mini comics with his character Fish Crow, and I think those comics really have that ability to raise moods. It's really if you're in a bad mood or something, just look at his Tumblr page, and those super adorable and funny comics, mini comics will they will improve your mood. They will they will make you smile. I assure you.
I frequently use the Fish Crow sticker pack on Telegram.
that's amazing. So that it's usable in every situation because it's very big, huge, and yeah.
Now, Core, because I know Fleeks, you are a vapor. I'm also a vapor. Core, do you vape?
Used to. I don't anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Well. And just a brief vaping news, a new company just started this week, and it's something I think our fans will be interested in. It's called birdejuice.com, and they have a selection of avian-themed e-liquid designed to support the avian community and avian fans worldwide. So I've just placed an order there not long ago. It hasn't arrived yet, but being that I also typically use vapewild.com, but I've got to support fellow birds, so I figured why not give them a try.
Yeah, birds sell well. Everybody loves birds, so
everybody loves
birds. But you have to send me a few samples of that company.
I will. Your care package is coming.
I'm on their website now, and they have their featured flavors page here, and it's actually just a picture of a bird with like something in its mouth. Like, so there's their carrot cake flavor. So it's a picture of a bird with a carrot cake in its mouth. And then there's fried ice cream. So it's a picture of a bird wearing a sombrero with fried ice cream in its mouth.
It has sombrero. A bird with sombrero. That's I want to see that.
I may just have to break out my old e-cig just to give some of these a try.
Yeah. See, Core is salt. It works. Yes. Birds sell better than sex. I would say birds sell better than sex.
So listen up, all you marketing experts out there. We know that they teach you that sex sells in college. However, birds do it better.
Yeah. Use birds instead of tits. Or use tits instead of tits.
hey, birds of a feather get sticky together. Remember that.
What?
There is an artist I was going to give a quick shout out to. Her name is Hoodaloo. I really, like her work, and I would encourage.
Easily
anyone...
the most fun name to say out of any furry I've ever met.
Oh God, yes, Hoodaloo. especially within the avian community. So I would encourage anyone listening to definitely go out there and take a look at her work. And of course, if you can support her work as an artist, our community.
Artist profile linked in the description.
Yes. Our community really doesn't, our community loves artists, but I don't know if we fully appreciate just how many hours it takes to make a beautiful commission. So giving artists that we enjoy support and commissioning them and whatnot really is what we can do to keep the momentum going. So please support her work.
Furries are pretty generous if it comes to art. That's really a phenomenon in the fandom, and I'm pretty proud of that. If you can be proud about something. As an artist, if you settle down in the furry fandom and you have at least a bit of talent, I swear you can earn a lot of money because, like I said, furries are freaking generous if it comes to art.
You'll either make bank if you're one of the super popular artists, or in the very if you're a good artist, you'll be able to pay your monthly rent at least, guaranteed.
Yeah.
Yes. Though, and remember, all artists have to start somewhere. So if you're a new and upcoming artist and you're not really popular yet, just give it time and focus on doing what you love. It'll come.
Don't be afraid to advertise your work too. Like, get it out there as you're up and coming. People's opinions and have them mention you.
Exactly. A lot of artists who are drawing pretty good but have no success, it's mostly because they suck at PR, or they don't do PR. So, and then they hope that people come and find the gallery. But you need to be present in the, if you want to have success as an artist, you need to be present in the social media. That's just it.
It's true. Absolutely.
So, or in some Telegram chats, I think you can make friends in groups and then sell shirts to them, for example.
Yep.
Yes. All right. Question and answer time.
I love you all.
All right. Ready? Question time. All right.
Do this.
So I think we could take turns picking questions. I'll pick the first question from our fans. This comes from Prince Tabernak, the beautiful. Oh, Prince. You are so beautiful indeed. The question is this.
Beautiful alien bird. Sorry.
They are actually a peacock tower. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. I
said, there is something.
They are something with feathers and a beak, so we must like them. That's the law. The question is, what is your favorite bird? What is your least favorite bird? Okay, for me, I'll start it off. For me, my least favorite bird, there's two. I have to say two. I'm sorry. Got to have two. Pigeons are like flying sewers. They can be a nice pigeon can be wonderful, but most pigeons I run into are just annoying assholes. And the other one I actually hate are swans. And it's not that swans aren't beautiful birds, because they are. But what swans are protected by the U.S. government, and they're very good at coming to our local parks and just shitting everywhere. And it makes it disgusting to enjoy the park, and they can't get rid of them because they're protected by law. So, you know, fuck you, swans. Fuck you. As for my favorite bird, well, I would have to say, a little biased, but I tend to like eagles, especially the Australian eagle.
Ooh.
Because the Australian eagle is like the more intelligent, handsome version of the American eagle. It actually has a brain and knows how to use it, whereas the American eagle, God bless its soul, beautiful, beautiful bird, but not the brightest bulb on the block. Just being real with you.
It's fair enough. I think we previously established, most hawks and eagles and birds of prey are not the most intelligent species. They're fierce and terrifying, but what they, you know, they kind of lack in the intelligence department.
Yes, yes. Whereas I am the best of all components, so, you know.
Okay, sure.
Going on to you.
And, I have to say, of course, my favorite bird is the woodpecker, but besides that, and that's why I reacted like that on you, like that storm, is my favorite birds next to woodpeckers are actually pigeons, because they are like super adorable birds that sadly suffering a lot because of us humans. And a life in the city for a pigeon is like super stressful. Everywhere are those spikes. They can't settle down anywhere. They get feed shit, more or less. Not literally, but you know what I mean. And they always struggle to survive. For example, a pigeon that lives in the outskirts of a city or like in a less populated village or something, they have a lifespan, I think it was about 7 years, up to 10 years. And city pigeons are only living about 2 years if they even reach that. And they are like, I like them because I think pigeons are really cute, and the thing is that the humans should help them to prevent them from even going in the city by, I don't know the word for it, but in my hometown, for example, we had a pretty big problem with pigeons, but my university on the roof, and my university is a bit outside in the south of the city, not in the center. And they have like they built up some spots for pigeons where they have warm nests and they have food and everything. And the thing is, that the pigeons then prefer to go there instead of the center of the town. And I think you can figure out the rest. So, and they are pretty healthy. And another thing they do, the biologists actually, and I'm really think about participating on the project, is like they replacing their eggs by chalk eggs, you know, fake eggs, and then they do not lay another egg, because if they have eggs in their nests, they don't lay another egg. And another fun fact is, if a pigeon is stressed and not healthy, it lays more eggs than it lays when it's healthy and feed.
And then you get unhealthy pigeons being born.
So the pigeons you probably call as you don't like are the city pigeons who are sick and laying eggs after eggs after eggs because they feel so bad.
Huh, that's an interesting reaction to stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a survival strategy, I think. But nobody's entirely sure why they lay more eggs when they are stressed and unhealthy.
I think pigeons are really cool. City pigeons, yeah, they're kind of grimy and gross birds. But if you ever go to like a 4-H thing, like out here in the Midwest, you'll actually see like homebred doves and pigeons, and there's some really unique species and some very, very beautiful species.
Yeah. And my least, I don't know if I really have a least favorite bird, because they all like acting like they have to act to survive in their natural habitat. But I think marabous are pretty much like they are super aggressive birds, and I wouldn't make a friend with them.
Fair enough.
Marabou storks, we had them in one of the decides questions, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Cor?
So it may be a little self-serving, but my favorite bird is the raven. Really, it is. I love the intelligence of the species. But COVID, I could go on about ravens for a while. I'll give you my second favorite bird, and that's the toucan. Specifically the toco toucan, the ones with the orange beaks and, you know, the black and white feathers.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely beautiful birds. They're not really all that well known for intelligence, but what makes toucans really cool is they're probably the most prehistoric level of bird that flies. Actually see in their mannerisms, like even though they're like largely fruit-based diet, just the way they fly and the way they hop around, their behaviorisms are very, very I guess raptor like
Okay, yeah.
But oh yeah, my least favorite bird is the seagull. I hate seagulls.
They're
horrible.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. I think they're fascinating. They're really fascinating. I was in Poland with friends, and
pelicans are a close pelicans are a close second though, because they are absolute assholes. Have you seen that video of the pelican that just lands, walks like 5 feet, scoops up a pigeon in its mouth and eats it, and then just walks away like nothing else, and the pigeon's like sitting there in its gullet flapping around like help, help, help.
And yeah, he actually eats it. Yeah, pelicans actually eat other birds when they have
this. What the fuck?
So it's just like the pigeon does not even, it's like, yeah, I'm living my pigeon life, suddenly I'm in a pelican beak. But to seagulls, they are actually fun. They're really like they fly pretty well. If you throw a bread in the air or something, they catch it, guaranteed. They catch it in the flight. That was really fascinating to watch.
It's impressive. It's impressive. Well, the final question of the day I would propose, based on our wonderful fans, comes from Fleeky. And that is, what is your least and most favorite memory of 2016? I'll start with you, Fleeks.
Oh, God. My most favorite memory is probably joining the bird crew. A very cool bird chat on Telegram. But also, I think I have a lot of positive vibes about 2016. It's my Yeah, it's one of my, but it's also one of, I also have a lot of unpleasant memories because a relationship broke and, I think 2016 was a pretty decent year, but it also had its huge flaws. I can't really say a certain thing that happened that's my least or most favorite thing, but yeah.
Okay. For 2016, start with the negative, end on positive. That's the way I was raised.
Okay. Let's see. For negative, unfortunately, my grandmother passed away this year, and it was very hard on me. Oh. So that was, yeah, Grandma Bird passed away. So she left an impact on me, and she will be remembered, especially her goofy, happy times and how she would always keep my grandfather in line. And my God, was she a pistol. Even in her last days, she would get up and cook dinner and whatnot for us because she was on a mission. And when she set herself to something, there was nothing you could do to get her to change her mind.
Aww.
So I miss you, Grandma. Let's see. And, of course, the election, but I'll leave it at that. For positive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Don't talk about that. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think I have
and
my
you're not even an American fleeks, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I'm not an American, but it's a worldwide thing, so yeah. Yeah.
For positive, something utterly amazing happened to me this year, and that is this wonderful purple raven named Core invited me to join the bird chat.
Oh, stop you.
Think of something else. And after joining this wonderful community and truly being accepted into this flock of supporting birds, despite thick and thin, despite good times and bad times, these people, or birds I should say, especially Core, have stuck by me. And they've helped me grow as an individual to be a better person. And Core has also helped me make my dream come true of making a bird podcast. This is something I've been kicking around for a couple of years.
And I spit
the idea at Core in conversation, and he loved it. And between his very go-getter, let this get this shit done yesterday personality, and my idea and feedback, as well as you, Fleeks, coming on board and providing your German touch, I think this has turned into something very special. And I'm very thankful that Core allowed me into his life and into this community because it means a lot. It really does.
Yeah, that actually.
Sorry,
but it actually reminds me of one of my favorite things that happened in 2016. Thank you, Storm. I put my artwork in the art show of the Euroference, and I sold everything for a very good price. Really, I was standing in front of my panel, and I was like, "Wow, really?
Nice!
Wow!" I was really like, I was shivering and almost crying because I was so happy. I sadly did not make it in the auction. That would have killed me probably emotional. But yeah, it was fantastic. Like the people standing in front of me and said, "Wow, that's cool. That's something else and stuff." And I heard that and I was like, "Oh man, that was like giving me the drive to make more art and more like more designs. I'm doing that designs."
It's because you have a lot of talent.
Thanks, Fleeks, you're a wonderful person and you're very talented. Don't ever discredit yourself.
I don't do. I know that. No, just kidding.
Now do you, Core.
And thank you so much, Storm, for the compliment. But you're a huge ball of cheese.
Yeah, I'm also pretty glad that you're like, if there are any position I can fill, you come to me, Core. Like, I feel pretty honored.
Oh, I got a few positions you can fill.
Oh, that's cheesy now.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, worst memory of 2016. You know, this has actually been a pretty good year for me. It really has. Probably one of the hardest memories of this year is just the fact that, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I didn't pass my zoology course, which, I mean, to any ordinary, like to anybody else, that may sound like, oh, well, that's not that big of a deal. It was actually kind of impactful on me because, one, I really studied my brains out for that course. And two, by not passing it, I kind of set my like college timeline back by like 6 months to a year. So it was rough. But I'm going to tackle it again this upcoming semester. So wish me luck there. And as far as best memories go, this podcast is definitely up there. I think it's probably number two or three. But number one is the fact that I met my girlfriend and Gina. She is amazing. Easily the best thing to happen to me in my life as of yet. So I want to pass that on out to her.
It's fun how positive and negative for us two is the opposite, because I lost my girlfriend, but I passed my organic chemistry exam with one of the best grades. So,
oh, that is wonderful, Core. That really is.
Was there anything else we want to do for the show, or should we wrap up?
I wanted you have to guess a bird. You just have to do that because we didn't do it last time, and I want to let you guess a bird. And I think it's pretty easy, but you always surprise me, so. Okay.
Go ahead.
I read the facts, and you tell me what bird it could be. You guess it. Yeah, it's guess the bird. Okay, the bird today we have has a dirty greenish feathers.
Kakapo.
Right.
What?
That's right. But to make it complete, I want to read the other facts too. So yeah,
I'm so sorry.
What the hell? Kakapo. Hey, right. I was gonna guess Nande Conyer because they also have dirty greenish feathers. But
this bird lives in New Zealand, and it's as we all hopefully know, it's an endangered bird. And it is now extinct through its natural range, and it survives only on three small, intensively managed islands following a series of successful translocations. So they were put on that island away from the raptors the humans brought in.
That's good. I made the joke before in chat, but it would actually be really cool, like, to go down to New Zealand and like farm kakapos. I would definitely help the species make a turnaround.
Yeah, they actually 130 individuals on the three islands, I think. So you see how much they endanger it. And also they are flightless. We all know. We all know that.
And super goofy.
And one of the things I want to add, because you would probably know it, Dan, is it regularly confuses the scientists on the islands with mates. Their heads, to be exactly. So they're pairing with their heads.
Oh my god.
You made a new record in guessing the bird, Core. How do you feel?
Core, you suck. That's all I'm gonna say. Damn bird.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, guess that's about time to wrap it up, guys.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. You can always catch us on Twitter or Facebook. We are Bird Life Podcast. You can send us an email at beep@bird.life. And you can also subscribe via iTunes, Google Play Music, or via the RSS feed. Yay!
And don't forget, this show does not run for free. You know, we have to survive our alcohol.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does run for free, but we actually accept donations, and on our webpage, bird.life.
As you know, our hosts run on mainly alcohol and love from our fans, but unfortunately, our computer systems do not. So if you would like to support the show, please go on to our website at bird.life, find the Kiss a Bird icon, click on that, and donate a few shinies if you can. Any amount is appreciated, and we will happily give you lots and lots of beeps.
Yeah, so specifically, when you click the Kiss a Bird icon, it's only a dollar. There is a way to circumvent that and donate more if you want, but I won't go into that. It's just like, if you like an episode, if you enjoyed this episode and you want to help support the show, consider donating a dollar. And like, everyone adds up and it really helps out, and asking for money is awkward, so we're sorry about this really long, weird outro thing, but thank you so much for joining us. Always be beeping.
Always be beeping.
And if you're a griffin, always be beeping and throwing a few meows too. It's all good.
Griffins can meow.
Some can. I've seen it all. Some can bark too. It's weird.
Oh, yeah. Always be beeping.
Always be beeping.
Furries are very spendable. If it comes, not spendable. Ah, that was a Germanism. I tried again. Give me a second. I should look for the word. Cut this out later, okay?
Okay. No.